Blog Talk Radio.
I stroll through the pictures, what I've left behind. You want again. I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know just what you have done.
Good evening. Welcome to the Stop Child Abuse Now Blog Talk Radio Show, sponsored by the National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse. My name is Tammy Shelfstall. I'm calling in from Lighthouse Point, Florida, and I'll be your host tonight. I'm also a survivor of child abuse. Tonight's show is a question and answer open mic discussion show with Dr. Jaime Romo. He's from California. If folks would like to call in, please do so. We know we have people streaming in, and we're glad to have you there as well. We do need to have a couple of folks call in for participation. That would be amazing. The telephone number is 646-595-2118. That's 646-595-2118. Before we get started with the show, let me tell you a little bit about NASCA. The National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse is a nonprofit 501c3 organization, and we're self-supporting through our own contribution. If you'd like to donate to NASCA, please do so, and it is tax deductible. Here at NASCA, we have a single purpose to address issues related to child abuse, childhood abuse, and trauma, including sexual assault, violent and physical abuse, emotional traumas, and neglect. And we do so from two perspectives. First, we educate the public, especially getting society over the taboo of discussing childhood sexual abuse, and we present the facts to show child abuse to be a pandemic worldwide problem that affects everyone. We also offer hope and healing through numerous paths, providing many services to adult survivors of child abuse and information for anyone who is interested in the many issues involving prevention, intervention, and recovery. Again, please call in. We could use some support. 646 595-2118. We do know from the stats that we do have a lot of people streaming in, and I'd like to welcome those folks as well. We do have one caller, which is our co-host, who has called in. That's Mark from Louisiana. Good evening, Mark. How are you?
Good evening, Tammy. Doing just fine. How about you?
Oh, I'm doing well. I'm just still at work, but it's all good. Thank you for being here. Thank you for the support. And then without further ado, I'll go ahead and introduce Dr. Jaime Romo a little more. Dr. Romo was from San Diego, California. He's an educator, consultant, author, and commissioned minister who promotes healing from abuse and the prevention of childhood sexual abuse, particularly those in the from the religious authorities or the context of a religious setting. He wrote the workbook, Healing the Sexual Abused Heart, a workbook for survivors, thrivers, and supporters. Good evening, Dr. Jaime Romo. How are you tonight?
Hi. Thanks, Tammy. I'm great. It's been a long day. It's a good problem to have a lot of things that I'm needed for or useful for. So thanks.
Good. Well, I would like to welcome you. We always have a wonderful show when you're here. I just love your voice. It's so soothing. So I'd like to throw the mic over to you if you've got something that's on your heart or a theme that you'd like to get us started with, and hopefully some other folks will call in the meantime. Dr. Jaime, the mic is yours.
Thank you. Well, I saw this. I'd like to start with something I saw actually on Facebook, and it's just a real kind of compassionate reflection as we are not getting back to normal, because that's not happening. In fact, a lot of things that were considered normal weren't that great. So it's a time of like being intentional, but it's a compassionate reflection on how this year has been. And then I think of how any trauma, past or ongoing present stressors, can affect people. And I think of it in kind of like four levels or perspectives. You know, one, that people can feel like victimized of things, events or circumstance. And there's a way of kind of seeing the world and dealing with life and from that perspective. And then the next is kind of the survivor mode, which I think a lot of in this show, you know, it's adult survivors. And I think that's a step beyond, you know, being in the middle of that trauma in the moment. But we can also still get triggered by the past stuff. And I think there's another step or two or more that, you know, that I call one the survivor thriver, where we, regardless of what's happened in our past, and even regardless of what's going on in our present, that we're present. You know, we're in the here and now. And that allows us to, you know, to not necessarily, you know, fix and make everything better right away, but to have, you know, to stay connected with ourselves and be responsible for ourselves. And then and beyond that, once we have a sense of, you know, strength and learning and so on, then we can, I think, be a resource for others. And so that's the general map I work with, and so I welcome any thoughts about that. But I want to start with this this reflection from Facebook. It says, everyone I know is full-on struggling with the aftermath of the past year plus and a still unknown future. Truly, be patient and kind with the folks around you. Fragility out here is near universal, and we all need every drop of the love that the people in our lives can spare us. So with that, I just say, you know, these, imagine them as perspectives or maybe consider stages of healing. So wherever we are, I mean, we may experience those, you know, throughout our lives, sometimes feeling in the victim place, other times feeling like I'm managing and I'm helping others because of my experience. So later on, I have a few, like, counsels or advice, but I'd like to reflect on them together through those four lenses to see, well, does that make sense? Does this resonate with you and with others? So for now, any thoughts about those steps or just the general idea of, yeah, more than ever, we need to be compassionate with ourselves and others?
Well, my thoughts, this is Tammy, my thoughts are, you know, it's easy for us to slip back. I think a lot of us survivors who are on a healing path, you know, some days are better than others. I truly believe folks who are at the beginning of their survivor journey, you know, I think validation is so important. And we may not ever get the validation from the people we want it from. Sometimes we have to give ourselves validation, and it's possible. You know, I've had to give myself validation. You know, one of my main survivors died, and she never acknowledged what she did to me. But, you know, I know at the beginning I was reaching out for validation, you know, wanting to scream from the mountaintops and tell everybody what happened to me. And, you know, I got some validation from NASCA, but a lot of the validation I got from myself. You know, I had to tell myself, you didn't deserve what she gave you. You know, she was wrong. She, you know, she didn't have a right to do what she did. And I think it's a lot of times it's really hard for us to get on in a better place until we get that validation. I don't know. That's just the thoughts off the top of my head. What do you think?
Well, I really appreciate that. I mean, we have to have something in our reserve, you know, before we're giving it to someone else. And that can be a hard thing. I know for me, you know, I grew up thinking that I needed to, you know, no one was going to take care of me, so I need to do that myself. And then when I was feeling broken, I was still trying to fix myself. And, of course, you know, there's time where we need it from others, and if that's not going to – and in addition to that, we need it from ourselves. I mean, I know that was a real turning point when I recognized that, you know, my pattern of, you know, growing up with abandonment and abuse and then feeling, like, wrapped in shame, that I perpetuated that. And then, so I was abandoning myself in a lot of ways, abusive to myself in a lot of ways, and then still wrapped in shame. And so the real significant shift was then to be, you're saying validating, and I'm saying, you know, be present to myself, be good to myself,
right.
not perpetuate the shame, you know, recognize growth. So, yeah, that's important always, but I know, especially early on, I mean, it's so needed. I mean, if we're dry, like, we need water, and we need that positive, healthy, you know, connection and love.
Absolutely. Before we go on, I'd like to welcome Darlene to the show. Darlene's calling in from Tennessee. Good evening, Darlene. How are you?
Good evening. I'm Fred Midland. How about y'all?
Oh, I'm doing well. Thank you for calling in. I really appreciate the support.
Thank you.
Okay. Well, we've got Dr. Jaime Romo, we've got Mark from Louisiana, we have Darlene from Tennessee, and I'm Tammy. I'm calling in from Florida. And what we were talking about was, you know, how can we get to a better place? I don't want to, you know, Dr. Jaime, I'm not going to ask you to repeat everything you said, but maybe we could, you know, give us a synopsis, you know, just a quick synopsis, so Darlene can participate, and then we'll go to Mark as well. Did I say it correctly? You know, how do we get to a better place? How can we heal? How can we take care of ourselves? You know, especially when we have triggers and stuff. Okay.
Yeah. And so first, I apologize for any background noise. I am in a moving vehicle on Bluetooth for a few minutes. And but the idea is that, you know, the healing journey is enough work and difficult that requires us to be compassionate with ourselves. And then in the context of the past year and a half, there's an extra layer of difficulty. And I do think that there are, just like in our regular growth, you know, there are stages of growth and, you know, moving from when we're maybe initially kind of raw and recalling our traumas, our abuses, and feeling like we're trapped in those, to kind of feeling like we're surviving them, and that's, that shows strength, resilience, and at the same time, it can be focused on that past. And then there's a time, I think, I'm just calling it a survivor-thriver, where we're responsible for us, whatever happens, you know, in us, to us, around us, and even in the present, you know, that we're really present. And that allows us then to be, you know, kind of that change we want to see in the world. But for me, coming from a different place of what I would just call it love, you know? And I don't mean that in some kind of simple, superficial way, but that's deeper healing, right? That we're able to show compassion as part of our regular way of being to ourselves and to others.
Right. You know, a friend of mine posted on Facebook, she's a normie, she put on there that your trauma, now I thought it was kind of mean, your trauma doesn't give you the right to treat everybody else badly. It doesn't, you know, it doesn't excuse your behavior. And to a point, it's right, but at the same time, when people are struggling, it's hard to see past that pain. It's hard to see past, you know, what happened to us. But we have to. It's not an excuse poorly. Sometimes it's because, you know, we're in so much pain. Sometimes it's because we don't know how to treat people because we've never been treated well. But, you know, I agree with you. We need to get, you know, we need to, you know, sometimes we have to be our own cheerleader, and we need to be able to you know, be in a happy place in our lives and, you know, inspired to help others. I totally agree with that. Let's go to Mark first, and then we'll go to Darlene. Mark, do you have any thoughts on this?
Yes. I can have thoughts looking at it from the other side of the coin. Of course, you know, Pamela was the one sexually abused from 4 to 18. And, you know, when I met her, I didn't know anything, you know, about what happened to her. And as we got married and as years went by, I think she shared this before, she got busy. She had a career and kids and put all her memories in the back part of her brain. But when they started coming out and they started recognizing, and then I started recognizing, you know, like Dr. Jaime said, I think for me, I had some compassion for her. I'm not bragging. That's just what I did. And that love helped her, I think, see her through the pains. And she went through some pain after her memories came up. You know, she had to go back in the hospital, and she was daily dealing with the running tape in her head, and the memories are coming out. And, you know, she would tell me about stuff, and not as little as I knew. I'm not a psychiatrist or anything, but I just had an ear, you know, to listen, to understand, and to just say, it's all right. You know, I'm here. I'm not going anywhere. So, you know, help you get through it. And I used to sometimes see her, you know, I'd be looking, like I call it freeze framing, and I would just look at her, you know, in her 50s, and I would look, it would seem to me that I was seeing her as that child and saying, just please love me. Just please don't hurt me no more. Just love me. And that made me even feel more stronger to just stand with her and help her through this. And, of course, you know the rest of the story. Now she's pretty much got past it. She's an advocate, and she's really, speaks up about it. But I was on the other side of the coin. You know, I'm what you call a normie. And that's what I am. I can't get back, you know, I can't deny that. But that's how I saw her and seeing the abuse that she went through and knowing about it and knowing who did it and everything, because I knew the whole family and all the things that went on after her memory started coming out. So, yeah, compassion for all those who are listening. Compassion is and love. Is a very strong support for someone who's been abused. I think people that you mentioned on that Facebook, if they say stuff like that, I just think they're ignorant. You know, they don't understand that there's, you know, you didn't walk in their shoes, so you don't know. So you shouldn't judge or say anything, but have love and compassion for it all. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, thank you. Thank you.
Absolutely. I dropped my phone. Sorry about that. Yeah, absolutely. Dr. Jaime, do you want to comment before we go to Darlene on what Mark has shared? Pardon me.
Oh, I just want to really affirm, I mean, the workbook's called A Workbook for Survivors, Thrivers, and Supporters. And for people to be a safe and compassionate presence, if someone, you know, just acknowledges and, you know, expresses the pain that is there, is very healing. It's so critical. And thank you. What a beautiful example.
Absolutely. Darlene, what do you think about all this?
Well, I think it is important to show love, and I noticed something that we have always done all our life. You know, we try to show the parents love and all that, but their love was not reciprocated, right? And then there's somebody that you come across when you're grown or something like that that shows appreciation for something you do or smile or anything like that. And that, I think that little bit even helps us start healing as well. When you see some positive shown towards you, I was about to say as well. It's going to say Warren. I'm like, ah.
Absolutely. Any more thoughts on that anybody would like to share that they didn't have an opportunity to?
And one thing that I shared last night, Dr. Jaime and all, was that that it showed in the news sometime last year, in 2019, about 176 schools in Tennessee, I guess, are trying out a thing about trauma-informed. And I think that's a big step.
Wow, that is awesome. You know, there's more and more research that is validating, you know, not just war trauma or certain, you know, single event traumas, but, you know, developmental, what people grow up with and what is shared, you know, in environments and in family systems and, you know, and this, it's a huge step, you know, for people to become aware. There's the expression trauma informed, and it may sound like once I'm aware, that's it, I'm informed. But the groups that have been doing the work and learning and being really effective in promoting healing and applying this in the different areas, like even the court system and in schools.
Mm-hmm.
And in healthcare, I mean, there are a lot of practices that happen in schools and healthcare that are traumatizing. And so in all
yeah.
areas, more and more people are becoming aware, but that's just the first step. Then people have to call it become trauma-sensitive. Like, now I see how this applies to me, or I see it. You know, it's like learning
yeah.
a language. We hear something, and then we can learn to read. But that's for ourselves. And then trauma responsive is, okay, now I can use this in simple ways and interpersonally. And that is really important, helpful. But then trauma informed is now, like, now we're talking about groups and organizations and systems, and we're far from that. But there are pockets across the country and world that are starting to learn and work, you know, in this way. So I'm really excited. That's beautiful. Thank you.
Yeah, and they were saying that that they got courses to keep teach the different people more about trauma, you know, so they'll know what to expect and what to look for in the children and all, you know. So basically the teachers and all are getting trained to be trauma-informed, which is good. And
mm-hmm.
more than trauma for, but trauma of, you know, but that's awesome. And it's really good, too, that, let's see, what else was that? So they said that the people were not hardly missing school as much, a lot more, less absences. The kids have been, there's been a lot less, you know, having to put people on detentions and stuff. There's a lot more teacher and student friendship.
Yeah,
hmm.
all of this is there's studies, there are more and more groups that are learning and then applying and then gathering data like that. And, you know, those are,
right.
they're not promises, but they are outcomes that tend to be happening because, sure, people feel safer, right? That's one of the core principles in a trauma-informed organization. People know that they can trust that things will be more fair, or they can trust the people, the authority figures, because maybe they show better boundaries, or you know, they follow up in a way that's equitable. And there's more choice. So, I mean, that's good teaching anyway. There's not just one way to teach and learn, but there are many. And so students have a choice about how they're learning, as probably in other ways in the school as well. And so their voice matters, right? And then they feel empowered. So when those things are happening, that tends to be, you know, positive connections. And so people's stress level can go down. People can learn better because their stress level is down. I mean, it's not a promise, a guarantee, but it tends to be those kind of results.
Yeah, and the first year, which was the year before last, it said that there was just 50-something schools, right? And now this time the study went further to include 176 schools or something like that.
Yeah, that is good to hear. That is so good to hear.
Yes.
And what's kind of a paradox, I just did a little presentation. I work within the San Diego Kaiser Permanente system. And the ACE study, the Adverse Childhood Experience Study, was really the first of its kind to look at the correlation between childhood abuse of various kinds, what happens to us, what happens around us, what should have happened, and neglect, and how that then snowballs and impacts people's physical health and behavioral health and leads to all kinds of things when they are unchecked. You know, and so it leads to COPD, and it leads to anxiety and depression and, you know, drug users and all this stuff, because the coping mechanism's gone wild. And so I did this presentation yesterday with a group of Kaiser people, and they had never heard of the ACE study. And it happened here in San Diego in 1998 with a Kaiser Permanente physician in a Kaiser Permanente program. And so little by little, you know, we're going to keep learning and, you know, discovering what a lot of people already know. And really happy to hear that that there's that kind of, you know, creating safer, healthier, healing spaces. How awesome.
Yes, it is. And knowing that when you go to school, there's a safe place to go to, possibly to tell somebody, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, this is Tammy, not only in schools, but, you know, I hear this on the radio show. I think we heard it last Thursday when I was on, when Barbara Joy was on, you know, that, yeah, I think it was Victoria. And then I've heard this repeatedly where they go to a therapist and the therapist basically berates them and blames them, you know, and doesn't, you know, does more damage than good. You know, I think Victoria, she's not here on the show. I wouldn't say her last name. But, you know, she was telling us how she went to a therapist because she said, well, you know, you put yourself, you didn't leave. You could have done this. You could have done that. And all I could think is this woman wasn't trauma trained. You know, she's not, she may be a therapist. She may, you know, have her, you know, her degrees, but, you know, she doesn't have a clue how to deal with, you know, a survivor, especially sexual abuse. I was outraged as this person was telling her story. It was just, they need to be trauma trained. You know, we need trauma trained. I'm glad it's good that we have it more and more in the schools, and hopefully we can see more and more, you know, in therapists as well. That just stuck out my mind from last week. That's all. I just think,
yeah,
you know,
well,
we need a special kind of love and care. Go ahead, doctor.
Gabor Mate is an awesome physician, trauma expert, and he tells a version of this joke that, like, what do you call a therapist who hasn't done their own trauma work? You call a psychiatrist. Everybody needs to do their own work. Otherwise, of course, we're going to project. And different therapies are helpful, but mm-hmm. not all are trauma-specific, and certainly not all are delivered in a way that honors the foundation of a healing relationship. Again, you know, safety, trust, choice, voice of the person who's got the experience, and empowerment. I hope that person would leave and not go back to such a person who takes up that kind of authority, right?
Right. Absolutely. Let's see. Do we have anybody else? I'm very thankful for you guys to call in tonight. I'm glad you called in, Darlene. I appreciate your participation, Mark, as well. If anyone is listening, and we do know we have a lot of people who stream in, and that's okay. If you do want to call in, tonight would be a really good night to join the discussions. The number is 646-595-2118. You know, a lot of folks think, you know, if we just have three or four people on the panel, that we're just, you know, reaching three or four people, but we know, looking from the stats, and we can't tell the stats until the next day, we could have as much as 300 people listening. And I know that I saw the stats one day, and there was 2,000 people who had chimed in. So, you know, what we're doing here and the discussions are important toward the people who are listening, the people who are on the panel as well. So I'm grateful for the support that you guys are providing to each other here on the call and the people who may be streaming in. So thank you so much. Dr. Jaime, I'm going to throw the mic back to you. If there's something else you want to add or a different direction you want to go, the mic is yours.
Thank you. You read my mind. So the first part, you know, we've been kind of introducing and sharing, and have talked about, and I have a few different examples that I want to offer the first one. We've been talking about love and compassion and how to be, you know, helpful for others. And I've mentioned these kind of four perspectives, one of victimhood or being a survivor compared to a survivor-thriver compared to a thriver. And I don't say those in a way that's like this is the way it is or in a judgment, like, because a competitive part of me is always like, well, I want to be a thriver, even if I'm hurting myself trying to be that. So I have these sayings that I don't know where I got them, these counsels about living. And then I interpreted them, so it's subjective, and I welcome your perspective and, you know, disagreement or other takes on it. But I wonder if, you know, that might also open up some insight for us. And the first one is about love. It says, love deeply and passionately. You might get hurt, but it's the only way to live. Sounds like a great wisdom that someone looking back their happy life might say. And now from the victim lens, that might be difficult, right? So maybe from the victim lens, we aren't really loving so much as we're actually abusing either ourselves or abusive towards others, you know, whether it's our mind, body, or, you know, spirit. And you know, I think, Tammy, you kind of referred to this earlier. I mean, there are times when we're raw and we don't have the grace, or that we're not in that place to have anything else but that maybe bitterness or reactivity come out. So that's where I see the possible for the victim interpretation or showing of that. The survivor, in my mind, might be live to not get hurt or to not lose. You know, so there's maybe a certain amount of control going on there. And I'm just saying, these are like my experiences, right? So that's... And so, you know, it's like don't get hurt rather than actually loving ourselves or others. And my experience and thought about the survivor-thriver is that we actually love ourselves. You know, we're present to ourselves, we're good to ourselves in body, mind, and spirit. And that allows us then, you know, call it a thriver mode perhaps, to love others. You know, love others and their bodies, minds, and spirit, you know, to treat others well. So that's one of the three kind of talking points. And so I just open it up and welcome your thoughts. I mean, and with the idea of, like, I may find myself at different times in these different places, but it kind of, for me, helps me to look at, like, well, am I loving myself, you know? Or if I'm being, you know, like, afraid of being hurt or, you know, being too controlling. Like, what's going on? You know?
Mm-hmm.
Your thoughts.
Well, this is Tammy. I'll get us started. You know, you're talking to someone who has some very, very, very thick walls. Through time, you know, I do let my walls down sometimes or thin them out, but my walls are thick because I have been so hurt, you know, and I have been, you know, someone like me that's been told you're dumb, you're stupid, you're worthless, you know, this world would be better off had you never been born. It's hard to love yourself. After a while, you start believing it. I've come past that. But also, you know, how do you trust? How do you trust when, you know, that's what you grow up with, and every time you turn around, you try to build a relationship, and you know, as survivors, a lot of times we don't pick the best relationships. We pick what's comfortable to us. And then we end up getting hurt all over again, and then, you know, the walls just, you know, they don't crumble down. So it's a work in progress for me. I still have relationships, don't get me wrong. But, I always know that, you know, trust is hard. You know, I still like somebody. I know they probably stabbed me in the back, and, you know, I don't trust them. You know, if it came back down to me or them, they're going to pick them. You know, I don't want to be cynical. But, you know, that's something that I struggle with on a regular basis. Fortunately, you know, I'm a controller, a director of finance and a controller, where I hold everybody else accountable. So it kind of complements me in my professional world. But at the same time, you know, I want somebody I can trust, somebody I can be vulnerable to. That's something I don't have in my life. You know, the closest I have are my kids. And then, you know, there's some issues there as well. One thing I have learned is to love myself, but I think that's something that a lot of survivors struggle with for various reasons, you know, out of guilt, out of shame, you know, out of being put down, out of, you know, having their self-esteem torn down. But if I had to, you know, give any advice to any survivor or anyone trying to get on a survivor path, learn to love yourself. It's not easy, but we have to, because we're with ourselves 24/7. You know, if we don't love us, you know, how can we love anybody else, and how can we expect anybody to love us? But we, you know, I think it's imperative that we learn, and we stop. You know, we have, you know, someone like me who's been beaten and battered as a child. You know, when they're long gone, I pick up the stick and beat myself. You know, and one day I had to say, stop. You know, you deserve better than this. So that's my thoughts. Dr. Jaime, if you'd like to respond before we go on to the other panel members, that's fine.
Yeah, thank you. Just that, you know, we do internalize what happens to us. And because it's familiar, even if it's not positive, we perpetuate it. It's kind of a natural thing. And it's no small thing to step back and kind of break that cycle. And there was a movie years ago with Mike Myers called The Love Guru, and it was really ridiculous. And he kind of was making fun of Deepak Chopra and people who were like, just be spiritual and everything would be great. And he had a series of books, and one of the books was called Stop beating yourself. Stop beating yourself. Mm-hmm. Why are you still beating yourself? And it was just that idea of, like, we can, it takes time for us to stop the abusive behavior. I mean, so first from others to us, but then us to us, and then mm-hmm. us to others. So it really is a process, and when we're hurt naturally, it's hard to trust, and that's foundational. And that's, you know, where the quote says, it's you might get hurt, but it's the only way to live. I mean, that's Brené Brown is mm-hmm. someone who talks about the power of vulnerability. And, I mean, what I appreciate is when people don't just have the idea, but it's coming from their experience, their lived experience. And so I appreciate there's nothing simple, easy about breaking and transforming that cycle of abuse.
Thank you. It's a work in progress every day. Panel members, let's start with Mark. Let's see. Let me go back to Mark. What do you think about all that?
Well, I'll add something to what you were saying, Pammy, about beginning by loving yourself. I think that's where Pam began, when she started recognizing, and she really, her safe haven, her really peace was her schooling, her education, and she decided to go back to school to be a social worker so she could learn partly about the abuse stuff that's going on in society and basically learn about herself, what was, you know, going on. And so for her, I think that's what began. She began to realize that she needed to look and take care of herself and start, you know, actually starting one step, two step on her journey, you know. And of course, you know, it's a journey, like all you guys say. But I think that's what was the same thing. She began to realize to love herself and to try and erase that tape in her head. And so she went and got her master's in social work, and it's really, for her, has made a lot of a difference, a lot of help to her. And now she tries to share with other people, especially when, you know, since she is director of communications and she's talking to people to come on the show, she's very, very adamant about trauma-based therapy. And, you know, she tries to help people to see that start by caring about yourself and getting into trauma-based to help get you on your journey. And I think that's all started with her when she recognized that she needed to make that first step.
You know, this is Cammy. You know, I'm one of those, too, where, you know, one of my nicknames when I was growing up was dummy. You know, you're dumb, you're stupid, you're worthless. You know, and I did that, too. You know, I'm a high school dropout. I have a GED associate, a bachelor's, a master's, and I'm about to earn my doctorate. And, you know, it's an over, I guess, some people can describe me as an overachiever, me trying to prove that I'm not that dumb girl. You know, it didn't make me a better person. The education I have didn't make me a better person. It you know, widened my horizons, but, you know, and it taught me a lot. But, you know, I'm proud of my achievements. But, you know, after I got all that, you know, I went home, and, you know, I can still go home, which is not as bad as it was now, but my stepdad, you know, he finally, a couple of years ago, told me he was proud of me, but they still treated me like that dumb girl. And I finally had to realize, you know, I could get all the degrees in the world and it's not going to matter. It's got to come from within. You know, I've got to have,
right.
I have to be able to build my self-esteem does not pivot on what those people who put me down all my life think of me, you know. I could get 1,000 degrees and it wouldn't change. So I totally understand that. And a lot of the classes I took, particularly in my master's degree and my doctorate program, mainly in my doctorate program, you know, anytime I had a psychology class, you know, I would do an intense study on child abuse and, you know, psychology. I'd use that opportunity to learn, not only to help other people, but to learn myself. So I know exactly how Pamela feels in that aspect. And Dr. Jaime, I don't want to speak for you, but, you know, I know we've been on the show enough that you've kind of alluded to that as well, right?
Well, absolutely. And that was what I that was the context for me when I said, you know, I was abandoned, abused, and wrapped in shame, and then I abandoned myself and I was abusive to myself because I was trying to achieve so much and overachieve so I would feel close to okay. And mm-hmm. And I remember distinctly, you know, at one point, you know, I was pretty young, like the youngest, not the youngest, but a fairly young administrator in a very large school district. And that was, mm-hmm. you know, a pretty good thing. But inside, I just still felt like I could never do enough. I mean, I'm still not good enough. So it really, when I say, you know, it's no small thing to stop the perception, the interpretation that others have put on us and mm-hmm. reverse those. Yeah, it makes sense. And no doubt, you know, think of there are plenty of stories of outstanding athletes who are mm-hmm. working out their, you know, rage and their shame by being this incredible, you know, superhuman. And ultimately, you know, that's never good enough. I mean, we have to, you know, just be human. We have to love ourselves for ourselves, not for what we do, not for what we have, not for our titles. I mean, and I'm saying all those things because that's my experience. That's, you know, my learning. Mm-hmm. It was not simple. It was not just in my head. It was realizing, you know, after investing so much in all these external things, I was still, there was still some emptiness. It was still not happy. So it makes total sense.
Absolutely. Thank you. Thank you so much. Well, Darlene has just dropped off. Hopefully Darlene will call back, but if not, it'll be just us three. If anyone is listening, please call in 646-595-2118. Now, love was one of the things, but you mentioned several other things, and I think we talked about love a good bit. What was the other thing you said, Dr. Honey?
The, I'm going to have to look at my phone now. Hold on a sec.
That's okay.
Another part, I think, of being a happy person is to have dreams. And so the quote or the saying or the advice is, you know, never laugh at another's dream, at anyone's dream. People who don't have dreams don't have much. And that sounds right. No, don't.
Mm-hmm.
But again, maybe from a victim side, and again, this is my experience, so it's not, you know, absolute or anything, but, you know, when I was in that place of, you know, being full of rage and feeling like, you know, life has dealt me a terrible hand and so on, my thought was, you know, just take other people's dreams or crush other people's dreams or compete with other people's dreams. I mean, if I can't be happy, why should I send it to someone else? Can't celebrate
mm-hmm.
anybody else's vision or happiness. A survivor, though, was like, okay, follow others' dreams, you know, rather than like, what's mine? What is in my heart? What's my purpose? It was better, you know, than tearing something down. It was kind of constructive. But it was still not enough to keep me, you know, growing and really sustaining that. But then I think more, again, being present to myself, good to myself is, oh, notice, like, what is my dream? And share that with others. Take the risk. I mean, that's what I'm doing these days. Just taking a risk and saying, hey, I want to create a trauma resolution center.
Mm-hmm.
It has amazing potential. You know, how can we do this? And, you know, plenty of people are not, it's like speaking a different language.
Mm-hmm.
I'm willing to do that. And then, you know, the thriver side in my mind is, you know, we live our dreams and we create dreams. You know, we help others nurture their dreams. So, again, I think coming from a place of childhood abuse, dreams are important. And I just, again, invite any other thoughts about, does that make sense? Does that resonate? What do you think?
I think it resonates with me a lot. You know, it's really difficult to get to a point where we're happy for other people's dreams. You know, especially if we're not achieving ours. You know, we need to, in my opinion, not compare ourselves to other people. You know, we need to compare ourselves to ourselves, our yesterday self, and be cheerleaders for ourselves and for other people. You know, a lot of people like to squash our dreams, you know, and we can't let that hold us down either. Because people, like you said, they, you know, it's like you're speaking a different language. Well, that's okay. You don't have to understand my dream. It's my dream. And I can make it happen. You know, you can build your center and then you show them what you mean. Maybe they'll get it one day. But if they don't, that's fine too. I've come to a point to where I don't need people to tell me my dream is good or not. You know, if I think it is, then I need to go for it. And then, you know, not, you know, one of, you know, NASCA is not a religious organization. We are a 501c3, but I am a woman of faith. And one of the Ten Commandments that most people just schluff over is don't covet thy neighbor. And that sounds, you know, real, real simple, but can lead to a lot. You know, when we're always comparing ourselves to other people, you know, it can lead to jealousy, rage, and, you know, the breaking of the other Ten Commandments. You know, just we can't compare ourselves to other people. We need to, you know, be in our, you know, be in our, you know, in our dreams. And it's easier said than done, even though thou shalt not covet thy neighbor sounds really easy, and most people don't quite get it, in my opinion. I think that's one of the most important commandments, because it's so easy to get caught up in that, and the jealousy. Or, you know, well, you know, I'll never make it. Look at this person, you know. They're this, they have that. You know, they have these opportunities, and I don't. You know, I'll never make it. And we can't think like that. Well, you know, it'll hold us back. That's what's going through my mind. I don't know. Maybe I'm out in left field, but that's the way I see things. Any thoughts?
Hello, this is Mark. Yeah, I think that's true. You got to want for you, your desire, not look at someone else. Don't compare yourself. When you start comparing yourself, this is what, you know, I come from a college basketball, you know, lifestyle. Mm-hmm. Our coach always told us, you know, not to compare ourselves with another guy or another team, because there's always someone better and there's always someone not so good. So just take what you've got in your capabilities and do the best you can. So, you know, you don't have to worry about what someone else has achieved or is better than you. Do what you know you can do. And, you know, and basically you probably turn out to be pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
If you just keep your eyes off of other people's stuff and their life and their thing, and just look and take care of what you know you can do.
Right. Well, you know, with us survivors, it's easier said than done, because, you know, we have been put down, beaten, and battered. We just can't listen to those voices. And even when the voices, the actual voices go away, you know, it's ringing in our heads. So anyone who may be listening, please know that, you know, there is hope out there, and we don't have to accept what other people, you know, say about us and, you know, put limitations on us. You know, we set our limitations. I don't know. That's just what's going through my mind. You know, when I talked about my schooling, I'm sorry. When I talked about my schooling and, you know, and why I became a academic overachiever, you know, because I was a high school dropout, and I did, you know, I was told so often that, you know, I couldn't do anything. And then when I started getting my degrees, you know, I wanted praise. You know, I tell people, you know, yeah, I've got a master's degree. You know, it sounds good now. I remember when I got into a doctor program, one of my professors said, well, you know, he told the whole class, you know, I know you think you're all that in a bag of chips because you have a master's. Go hang it on the wall. Nobody here cares. You're in the doctorate program. You know, dust it off every now and again. It's not going to matter in the doctorate program. But, you know, up until that point, you know, I realized that I wanted people to say, well, good for you. I wanted the appraise that I never got as a child, or I never got from home or from my parents, that people normally get it from. But then I realized that I came off as bragging, you know, and it took years for me to understand that, you know, me telling everybody I had a master's degree, thinking that they're going to be proud of me and they're going to be, you know, boasting for me. And, you know, I ended up, you know, acting like I was a brag, or she, you know, acting like I was better than, and I'm not. And that's not even why I would bring it up. You know, looking back now on, you know, my older self, looking at my younger self, I realized, you know, what I was trying to achieve. And I also realized what I actually achieved by it. And I mean, I got it hanging on the wall in my office right now, you know, big deal. I mean, it's pretty up there, but, you know, it doesn't. I've learned to be really careful about that. But that was part of my dream, you know. But yeah, it's just, I don't know. What do you think?
Well,
what do y'all think?
Can I jump in?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
There's an exercise. I don't have it handy, but it's we're looking at when we or someone else does something, especially whether it's a positive thing or a negative thing, but it's often useful when we think about things that are not, you know, that we don't really like. You know, we can look at, like, so what was that person or what was I trying to solve or accomplish? And what you described sounds like, trying to solve that, getting praise that I didn't get. And I don't want to misrepresent you, but that's, I think that's a really thoughtful, really a higher level of consciousness, than we could have possibly had at the time. And I mentioned before, I thought I was, doing a good job in this big administration role. And, I had just gotten my master's and I was excited about that. And it did give me entree, to this career, but it was not because I had a plan or a dream. It was because I was either competing or someone else said, this is something you should do. That's where I started off saying, for us, we just need to continuously be compassionate with ourselves. And when we realize, can have some compassion and humility about our previous selves, makes us more able, hopefully, to be compassionate to others in their, present self that may be a reflection of our younger self. Who knows?
Absolutely. Well, thank you for that feedback. I really appreciate that. It's not now that I don't mention that I have a master's degree. I've mentioned it on this show. But I'm not so quick to, throw it out there. I've learned it's an achievement and I'm proud of it. But I've learned to, be a little more humble in my awards of life. A lot of times, especially with survivors, it's hard to, it's easy. It's easy to get green, to be a green-eyed monster of jealousy, because we see so many people having, what we didn't have. I've done enough of these shows and enough interviews to know that, that there are folks out there who did have a troubled life that, are jealous or treat people poorly that was a normie. Well, it's not their fault they're a normie. It's not their fault that we had a bad childhood and they didn't. Just like what Cindy put on Facebook, it's not her fault that, that me and other survivors, had trauma and she didn't. She shouldn't have to pay the price. But at the same time, a lot of us don't know how to handle normal. I've mentioned it earlier. A lot of times we pick relationships that are comfortable, not healthy, especially early on. I would never date the same guys that I dated years ago. I wouldn't date the same guys I dated 10 years ago because, I love myself more than I did then, and I would accept more. That's coming from learning how to love myself, humbly. I deserve good things. I deserve to have achievements. I deserve to, not just do it to prove other people wrong or because other people have goals or I wanted to, have that self-validation. I should have good things just because I deserve good things, not to validate my existence or validate my worth, self-worth. I don't know. I've come a long way. I got a long way to go, but I know I've come a long way in that aspect, because with me, I had zero self-esteem, zero. Then I had, even as I start building it, it was paper thin for years. I've got pretty decent self-esteem now in a humble way. I try to, have humble confidence. I love that word, humble confidence, because it is a balance and it's not easy to achieve, but I deserve good things. Survivors deserve good things. So, Dr. Jaime, what you achieved may have been, for different reasons than what you have now, but you deserve them. You earned them. And what you achieve now, you deserve. And I think if I'm understanding, I'm like you, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I think you're probably at a different place than you were when you were, that overachiever. Am I right?
Oh, I hope so.
I think so.
I would think of this, it's a model, and probably in the 70s, there was this expression, I'm okay, you're okay, right? And let's say hypothetically, you know, somebody starts out with that, you know, they have a nurturing environment and so on, and that's a good thing. We want that for everybody. Somewhere along the way, some may have gotten the message like I'm not okay, you're okay. And we really internalize that. And that can run for a while until maybe we kind of say, like, enough. And then we can flip. I mean, I think often it's normal for people to go in an either-or kind of mentality, which I think is normal and typical and also very limited and very limiting. And so then we can flip and say, okay, forget it. I'm okay. You're not okay. And you remember, I think you mentioned, Tammy, that TED Talk, the person who's called
Did you watch that?
It's very good. Very useful.
That
very
was
useful.
Good, wasn't it? I'm okay. I'm great and you're not. That's what it is.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, there's some resentment, you know, and again, from this is my experience, I'm wanting to overstate, you know, and have others recognize what wasn't before. You know, I am okay, but to the degree that it seems like a put down to others, and sometimes it is a direct one. And then ultimately, we get to the sense of we're okay, and also, you know, we've got a lot to grow. But this idea that I'm no better and lesser than anyone. I mean, and it's difficult because of our own life experience, and I think it's difficult because we live in this supremacist kind of history. You know, some are better. And I know there are a lot of, you know, different people are smart in different ways, and that's, you know, everybody's got the same kind of intelligence, but everybody's intelligent. And you know, like certain, you know, more money is a better thing, more whatever, you know, and things is a better thing. And this, we have this competitiveness that, you know, in schools, people looked at self-esteem movement in the 80s, I believe, thinking that, you know, we just needed to tell people that they were good and they're okay. And what happened is that bullies came out of that because they had this misinformed, inflated sense of self that was like, I'm okay and you're not. I'm better than others. It's a huge healing process, I think, to get to, like, I'm no better and no lesser than anyone. That's the reality. I'm just concurring and appreciating what you've shared.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. Mark, what do you think about all this?
Well, I actually remember that book, I'm Okay, You're Okay. I was fresh out of college in the late 70s, and I think I was at a point where, and I'll speak for myself now, and I didn't have any self-esteem. You know, once the ball stopped bouncing, that was my whole life, my whole identity, and then now I'm stepping into the real world, and I'm looking for answers. I'm trying to figure out who I am, and so I started looking, and I was one of the books I picked up. I know I've thought about transcendental meditation and astrology and all the nine yards that go with what people who are trying to find themselves in that era, you know, the late 70s, early 80s. And I think I couldn't pinpoint when exactly I started having esteem, but I think, I'll just spitball this, I think is when I met Pam and we started having a family. Now I had a wife and I had a kid and another kid, and now I felt this was my calling. And now I had that, my self-esteem rose up, and I was just, that was what I was doing. That was my life, and I accepted it. I was proud of it, and I went forward with it. And I really feel it was not the wrong choice at all. It was the right choice.
Absolutely.
What
we have to have something to look forward to as humans. We have to have something to look forward to and some sense of accomplishment.
I think the danger comes in where, you know, we, you know, either have to compare ourselves to other people or, you know, or, you know, define ourselves by the accomplishments that we have. You know, we have, you know, a woman, I'm 56 years old. I'm pushing 57. You know, I'm not 25 anymore. You know, I promised myself when I was 25, you know, and these older women treated me badly, I told myself when I get to be that age, I'm not going to treat girls like that. And I make an effort not to. I really do. But it's hard being 56 and looking at these little beautiful little 25-year-olds, you know, because I'm not that anymore. But I can't, you know, I can't hate myself because I don't look like that anymore. Or like you said, when the ball stops dribbling, you know, what's next? It's you know, I've come to with you know, being an older woman, you know, I've come to terms with, you know, I'm 56. You know, I'm not 25. You know, I can't measure myself by that same measuring stick. And that's really, really difficult sometimes, you know, especially for survivors, you know, that, you know, especially if we find, you know, a little bit of a niche or something that helps us. You know, if we lose that, it can be devastating. You know, we've got a lot of survivors who, you know, they get into painting, they get into, you know, singing, and they get into, you know, whatever the case may be, gardening or whatever. And if that's taken for them, it can be devastating. You know, it can be devastating for the normal person, let alone us survivors. I don't know. What do you think, Dr. Jaime?
Sorry, I was on mute. I'm in a noisy place. I agree. And this is part of our everybody's, you know, call it spiritual development, you know, human development is recognizing more who we are, you know, not based on other people or things. But if I may, I have one more of these kind of counsel advices to share.
Okay.
So the last one, again, sorry about the noise, is give people more than they expect and do it cheerfully. Right? Be generous. Why not? That's a great thing. But again, from the victim perspective, you know, giving, you're kidding? I'm stealing. You know, I don't have, I'm going to take. Right? My boundaries are messed up and maybe I can justify whatever, but that's my interpretation. And that's literally, I mean, it comes from my experience. The survivor perspective might be kind of hoarding. I'm just, you know, maybe I'll get them to earn them, but I'm going to collect them. I'm not about giving. I'm about holding on to. Or if I'm going to give something, it's, you know, because I'm going to get something back. You know, call it transactional, right? But I'm a survivor, thriver, in my mind, is I'm going to give, absolutely. But it's to the people I like. and the thriver, I think, is I'm going to give even to those who I don't like. You know, everybody deserves to receive if they need. So again, these are my, you know, kind of coming out of my experience, not, you know, saying this is right or a perfect model or, you know, that we stay in any one of those kind of perspectives, states of mind or practices because things change. But they've been helpful for me to take perspective. So again, I'll leave it up to others to share.
Okay. Well, I'll share first. We've got about 20 minutes left. That's a really good question, and I'll tell you right now, to give you a little bit of history of how I grew up, you know, when my mother moved back home, I couldn't remember. I mean, she moved back home when I was 18 months old, and she moved in with my grandmother and my grandfather. And my mother she was treated the same way with her brother. You know, in my grandparents' eyes, you know, my sister was the princess. She was beautiful, and she was everything they ever wanted, and I was a nuisance. And my mother was the same way. She was treated the same way, even though, you know, my uncle had moved out and they were grown. You know, she came back with two kids. And so, you know, growing up in that environment, you know, Tammy's dumb, she's stupid, this world would be better off had she never been born, versus, you know, this little, and my sister and I are very close in age. We're less than 2 years apart, and we were very close growing up. And, you know, she was sheltered and showered with love and affection, and I was abused. So coming from that perspective, it's hard, you know, for someone like me not to get my own, you know, not to, you know, to get past the jealousy and not, well, you know, I never got it there, so I'm going to take it. And it's, you know, thank God, you know, the Lord has blessed me with a different perspective, regardless of that. But it's hard. You know, there were times, especially when I was a kid, you know, thinking I'm going to get mine, you know, especially when we got away from my grandparents' house, you know, I'm going to get my own right now. But I think you're right. We have to be generous with people and do it with a smile. I love that. Because it is important to give back and not to be cynical and sinister. And that's difficult for us survivors sometimes because of, you know, our environment. But I think you're right. I think we need to make that effort every day. And, you know, if we're not doing it, try it. There's a lot of joy that comes from giving and helping other people. I mean, we're on this radio show right now. All three of us are giving our time to this radio show for people who may be listening in. And we know we have a lot of people who do stream in. And then we have people who listen to the recordings. We know that from the stats. You know, over the weekend when we don't even have a show, we'll have, you know, 30 people logged into the stats. That means they're going back and pulling up, you know, the recorded versions. So what we're doing is important, and we're giving back. And we're doing it with a smile. And from the heart, and I just, that's one of the reasons I love NASCA, and I love that concept. Give back and do it with a smile. I love that. Mark, what do you think?
I when I was younger, I learned to give at one point, but to back up, before that, I was always kind of a selfish person. I was the oldest in the family, but I don't know. Looking back on my life now, I'm trying to put it together, not for anything else, but just remembering. But I was selfish. But I guess my terminology was I was kind of an introverted selfish. I wasn't real boisterous or bold or, you know, hateful about it, but I was selfish. But when it came to that point in time, and it all started once again, for me, my journey really started when I got married and started having a family, and then I became a giver, and I loved it. I said, this is me. This is what I should have been doing all along, being a giver and helping, and now it's right smack in my face, and it's just wonderful. And that's, I think, when you do give and you do help, it puts a smile on your face, and you don't need anything in return. You know, you're doing it for just, I don't know, the sheer joy of helping and doing, you know. And I think that's important. And that's, for me, that's when it started, back in that moment when I started having a family. But before that, I call myself a selfish brat. But I was an introverted kind of brat, like I said. And I bet you people didn't even really know that, but I was. I remember the feelings and the thoughts I had at different times in those years, and it was about me.
Mhm. Right. Well, you know, how do I say this? The good thing about it, Mark, is you did learn to be a giver, and you did learn to share, and, you know, get out of your. Were you passive aggressive? You said an introvert is the same as passive aggressive.
Yeah,
but you've learned. I mean, you've got a beautiful family. You've had a beautiful marriage. You've got someone who depended on you. I mean, I'd love to have a man that I could depend on. You know, I'm 36. I'm divorced. I've been on my own for 20 years. I would love to have a man, you know, to I don't want to say take care of me, but, you know, to protect me. I've had to learn to protect myself. You know, I'm a very, very strong woman because I've had to be. You know, when I cried in the fetal position, there was nobody there. You know, I had to learn not to be in that fetal position for 2 weeks. You know, now I get in the fetal position for 2 hours. So, you know, kudos to you for you know, regardless of who you are. You know, we grow. We expand. We learn things, you know. And I tell survivors, from a survivor mode, you know, I hear this so much on this show and when I talk to people. You know, we're broken, and we realize, you know, what has happened to us, and we get on a healing journey, and we learn, and we learn, and we learn, and we learn, and we learn all kinds of wonderful things in our survival journey, and then we get to a good place. And all too often, it's so easy for survivors to turn backwards and say, what were you thinking? You know, Marcy, what were you thinking? Bob, what, you know, talking to themselves, what were you thinking? Tammy, what were you thinking? You know, how could you do that? But we have to remember, we're not the same person. We're not in the same place we were back then. We need to give ourselves a break. Yeah, you may have done that. You may have handled it this way. You know how to handle it better now, but don't beat yourself up because you didn't know how to handle it that way then. And I hear that repetitively. So anyone who may be listening, give yourself a break. Don't expect yourself to be, you know, to handle, don't expect that, you know, or beat yourself up because you didn't handle things, you know, then like you would now when you're in a better place and you've expanded and you've grown. So that's what's going through my mind. What do you think, Dr. Jaime?
I agree. I think that we're always growing, hopefully. I mean, there's an expression, you brought up age, but there's an expression, you know, experiences, how does it go? Experience is unavoidable, learning is optional. I mean, I hope we grow from our experiences, and it's a shame, you know, if we don't. That's different times, you know, there's no shame in that. Everybody has privilege to some degree. Everybody have way more, others have way more. So everybody has bias to some degree. Everybody has trauma to some degree, and there's no shame in that. The shame is in not learning from it and using it to help others. So we are always hopefully growing, and then be able to look back and, you know, use maybe that, you know, kind of classic lens, you know, not like what's wrong with you or what was wrong with you, but, you know, what happened to you? And, you know, like, what were you trying to accomplish or solve by that, you know? Mm-hmm. And by having some appreciation, then that frees us up a little bit. And you know, hopefully it frees us up to the degree that we can, again, to extend that generosity or that compassion to others. And I will say, though, that doesn't mean allowing others to do whatever. I mean, I mentioned before the Trauma Resolution Center in Miami, where I learned about traumatic incident reduction. It's a really powerful kind of way of processing that is not like therapist-driven, and actually a person doesn't even have to be a psychologist or, you know, an LCSW or whatever, because the methodology is so safe and trustworthy, and it's so patient, you know, client-centered, totally empowering, that that's so effective. But they have this sign on their door, and they were dealing with victims of violent crimes and people who, you know, were showing up with horrible things that have happened to them, and they were there to go through some education and some treatment, but they would be freed up. But at the front door, it said, be nice or leave. You know, it's like, yeah, I want to be compassionate and appreciate that I've been raw, and I've expressed stuff that, you know, was not nice, and I can appreciate that others can be in that place as well. That doesn't, you know, give us free rein.
Right.
I remember I was actually in Florida years ago as someone asked me to be a part of a workshop, and it was this one guy who came in, and it was about healing and it was about addictions. This guy just went off about, like, I'm an addict, I need my coffee, and he started to, like, just mistreating people around. And I thought, nah, dude, I get pain. It doesn't give you an excuse to be a total jerk, you know, like.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, I think there's this both and, you know, going on. But absolutely, be compassionate with ourselves, learn, and then we'll figure out how to treat one another well.
Absolutely. Well, we've got about 9 minutes left. Did you go over everything that you wanted to go over, Dr. Jaime? Are there any points that we haven't discussed that you wanted to? Okay. All right. Well, we've got.
Those are the three ones that I had in mind. I mean, but I guess I offer that as a framework maybe that we could use, you know, about other
mm-hmm.
areas. Like one
mm-hmm.
of the things that I don't remember how it goes, it was like don't spend all the money you have, don't like eat all the food you have and something like that. And I thought about that from a lens of, you know, well, what would a victim do? You know, a victim would be like live in addict mode, you know, like never enough. And,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
Can't have enough, can't, you know, spend enough, can't. And a survivor might be like a consumer, again, you know, just not being real discriminate. And
mm-hmm.
survivor, thriver, maybe being in the, more like, hey, what's good for me? You know, what do I like? And I'm going to learn this myself,
mm-hmm.
you know. I don't have to follow somebody else's rigid diet if I don't really understand it and if it doesn't really make sense to me. So on. I'm just saying there's hopefully, you know, this can spark other ways of thinking about our growth and, you know, without judging. That was my hope for tonight.
There you go. Well, we've had some really good discussions. We have about 7 minutes left that, you know, we can have some open forum. You know, I did see something you just said. I did see a spark the memory where there was a study where, you know, kids who, you know, were deprived of candy and deprived of, you know, not giving candy all the time, but never getting candy versus a kid who, you know, could have candy every once in a while. And then they put them in a room, and the kid who was not deprived of the candy, you know, took a couple of pieces, you know, ate it, enjoyed it, and, you know, left the rest of it. And the other kid that was deprived of the candy was eating all they could and shoving it in their pockets because they never got it. So, you know, a lot of times, you know, taking it back in this perspective, you know, if we've been starved for attention or we've been starved for this or starved for that, it's real easy for us to, you know, to cram our pockets with whatever we get, whether it's, you know, drugs or, you know, false love or whatever the case may be, to learn to, you know, even if we were deprived of that in the past, you know, we need to learn to, you know, not gorge and gouge down everything that comes our way. And I think a lot of survivors do struggle with that, whether it's alcohol or drugs or a relationship. You know, someone, you know, that was deprived of love, you know, they may, the person that shows them a little bit of affection, they think they're loved and they can't get away from them. You know, we have it with women. You know, they stay in these terrible relationships with men who treat them terribly. And I am a domestic violence survivor as well, so I was one of those. You know, and stay with a relationship because, you know, I thought, you know, we think these people love us, and it's not a healthy love. It's just we've been deprived, so we're filling our pockets with whatever love comes our way. I don't know. Because I think it's tough for a survivor. Any thoughts on that, either one of you?
Yeah, two quick thoughts. One is, I really appreciate you really enriching the conversation. And I mean, there's a science. I mean, when people, the studies about our biology is impacted, you know, with between one generation and another. And so, like, common examples were in World War II, when I think it was in Holland, when people were starving, and, you know, women who were carrying at the time passed along this hungry gene, you know, like, so kids who were born then during that time, their metabolism was such that they, like, absorbed all the food. And so, I mean, at a biological level, we have that, as well as, you know, psychologically, we can always have the sense of never having enough, never being enough. And that's a big deal, to have a sense of enoughness. So, yeah, I'm with you.
Okay. All right, Mark, what are your thoughts?
Well, honestly, I really don't know what to say about all that right now. I think, I know when you were just discussing about the thing in World War II and that gene, I know Pam's reading a book right now, The Body Keeps the Score. And so I think, you know, things that happen in our bodies come from various things that have happened over time. And I don't know much about it other than, you know, it does, I know that there's probably some effect to that that affects even all of us, you know, even normies. But I think it's interesting, and maybe I will sit down and read that book. But, you know, stuff happens and it affects you.
You know, there are many great researchers, and, you know, Body Keeps Score is a really good. Gabor Mate, his stuff is really good. And Bruce Perry, Bethel van der Kolk. I mean, there are so many great, you know, bodies of knowledge around how all these things, when they are not processed, not metabolized, you know, then they can impact us physically in our behavior. So, yeah, this is the science is a great help, I think, for all of us. And just like earlier, we talked about in Tennessee, more and more schools. I mean, little by little, we're all learning this language. We're hearing it, and little by little starting to make sense of it. And whether it's our own lived experience or others, you know, able to then, I think, be advocates for healing and being safer, you know, in our example. Beautiful.
What advice, when we're down to the last 2 minutes, so really quickly, if there's somebody who's listening and it's resonating with them, what advice can we give them, you know, if they have that never getting enough syndrome, you know, from their abuse, what advice can we give, if any?
Wow. Well, I mean, our body is a starting
point. Listen to your body, maybe.
Like, I think it's a starting point. And I think another part then is, you know, our behaviors tend to change if we hang out with people who have the behaviors we, you know, would like to have more of. It really makes a big difference. And so whether it's a show like this or groups, you know, that are doing some growth, right, that we can just be around and just, and, you know, everybody can benefit from, you know, that.
I just got the 60-second mark, but I think that's really good advice, is to surround our, you know, to change our surroundings. You know, if you're around a bunch of toxic people, try to find other people to hang out with. I think that's really good advice. We are down to the last few seconds. I'd like to thank Mark for coming on, and Darlene from Tennessee, even though she dropped off. Dr. Jaime Romo, it's always a pleasure to have you. It's been a really good show, and I've enjoyed the discussion. Thank you for being here with us.
Thanks.
Good night.
Well, good night. I'm going to end the show by saying God bless the children of the world, and God bless adult survivors of child abuse. Good night, everybody. Love.
Blog Talk Radio.